All right, hello, and today is July the 20th, 2011, and this is our gold call for the 30-day challenge. We have Trevor and Tony on the phone, and Trevor has a question. Go ahead.
Hi, Jody, and hi to all the listeners. Yes, Jody, my question is, a mother is in a shopping mall with her two-year-old child, and the two-year-old tends to throw tantrums whenever they are in the shopping center. She feels embarrassed to deal with it in the shopping center. In fact, she's not too sure how she should be handling it in a way that keeps her own dignity, the child's dignity, as well as the people's watching, comfortable with what and how she's handling the circumstances. Any advice, Jody?
Absolutely. Tantrums are a really good example of using the Universal Blueprint, because there's actually four different types of tantrums. And I'm actually going to refer folks right on the blog, on the parentstoolshop.org blog. There is a free article on temper tantrums. So if this is a mom that you know, you might want to print that out or send her to read over that. There's the whole key about...
I will do that.
Yeah. The whole key about temper tantrums is that you've got to figure out what type of problem it is. In the Universal Blueprint, you ask those three questions, and you end up realizing that every problem will fit within one of five categories. And in this situation, there's only about five different types of problems. One type of tantrum is a frustration tantrum, which is, and now I'm going to get back to the mom in the mall because I have a feeling I know what it is. But I'm going to give a real quick overview of what the article says.
Okay.
And actually, this is also in the Parents Tool Shop book,
okay.
Chapter 3, in the Universal Blueprint chapter, Chapter 3. The first type of tantrum is a frustration tantrum, which is the child, a sample example would be, the child's trying to make a dog out of Play-Doh or clay, and he can't quite get it to look right, and he gets frustrated, and he throws it down, and he starts to cry. That would be an example of a frustration tantrum. A frustration tantrum is a child problem. If we were to ask the three questions, it's dealing with his emotions, so it's a child problem. It's also a parent problem, problem behavior that's unintentional, because the child doesn't really have the skills, hasn't mastered the skills of managing his frustration and emotions, and so he has this meltdown. So if it's a child problem, we want to acknowledge feelings, use facts listening. So we would acknowledge the child's feelings and then help brainstorm ideas for what they could do with the clay, or how they could get the clay to look like a dog, or what else could they do with the clay. They could do some brainstorming. So the other three types of tantrums are all in the misbehavior area. The second type is unintentional misbehavior, which is overstimulation tantrum. Now, this does often happen when parents take their kids shopping, on errands, to the drive-thru, to the bank, and then to the grocery store. And kids just, they get so overstimulated, and they get tired, and they get hungry, and they parents kind of push them, well, we're almost done, we'll be home soon, and then kids have a meltdown. In that situation, it is problem behavior, but it's unintentional because the child hasn't mastered the skills for being able to manage their own anger or tiredness, and they also aren't always real verbal. These are usually younger kids. They're always not real verbal of being able to say, I'm hungry, I'm tired, or they say that, but parents are trying to kind of push the envelope, push the limit to get them to kind of finish up the errands, and then kids have a meltdown. So parents, first of all, a lot of the responsibility is on the parents in that situation, that they, if their kids are hungry or they're tired, they need to take care of their needs. And as children get older, we can be teaching our children how to speak up, how to recognize when they're starting to head down that road so they can let us know that they're getting tired before. So maybe we can do some drive-through errands or can pace ourselves a little bit differently so that in the long run, children will learn how to manage that better. And we can think, do things like bringing snacks with us and that type of thing. So that would be the second kind. The last two types of tantrums are both intentional tantrums. The first one is on purpose, and it would be for attention. And this is, you're not paying attention to me, so I'm going to start out doing things to get your attention. And if you don't pay attention to me, I'm going to get more and more and more outrageous to the point that if you try to ignore me or if you don't give me the attention, I'm really going to throw a big fit and have a tantrum that you can't possibly ignore. So following the universal blueprint, it's on purpose. That's the third question, and it's a parent problem. The misbehavior is on purpose, and the purpose is for attention. The 1, 2, 3 for attention is that you stop once, you tell the child how they can get attention in a positive way, and then you ignore the negative behavior. If you only ignore it, you do not stop one time and tell them how they can get positive attention, the ignoring will cause the tantrum to escalate. If you stop and say something more than once, then we're giving a payoff. And every single time we say, stop, leave me alone, don't do that, every single time we say that, we are giving them negative attention, and it's actually reinforcing the tantrum. So parents want to avoid those two things, and they want to, number one, only stop once. Number two, tell the child how they can get attention through positive behavior, and that would be something that would help the child feel like they belong, that they're important, that the parent understands their needs and is going to address that. And then number three, then they can ignore it. So that's the attention tantrum. The fourth type of tantrum is a power...
Jody, at what...
Go ahead.
Sorry, Jody, I was asking, what is the youngest age that one would talk to a child like this once?
The age that someone, that what's the last part of that? What's the age that?
The youngest age of the toddler who would understand this kind of approach.
It would depend on the child, on where their verbal and cognitive skills are, but even 18 months, you would be able to use more of the verbal skills. What you do with younger children is you still say the same words that you would say to an older child, number one, because they'll understand it before they can speak it, and number two, because we as parents need the practice.
Okay.
So you still say the same words, but while you are saying the words, you are taking a physical action. So it might be, for example, in the example of the overstimulation tantrum, you might acknowledge, oh, I can tell your body's telling you it's really hungry, it's really tired, and you're saying that as you are leaving the store or heading back home or reaching for a snack because they're hungry. So you couple what you say with action. And it's the same with all of these. So, and I'm going to get to what to do with the physical if they get destructive. I'm going to cover that last. So I'll come back to if they're being destructive.
Okay.
Usually the whole key is that before you move to discipline, and I'll offer some suggestions for what an appropriate discipline would be for each of the different types of tantrums. But before you move to discipline, it's always critical that you make sure that you redirect the misbehavior first. Because if you don't address the cause of the tantrum and you only discipline the tantrum itself, then you're not resolving the core issue and it's going to happen again. So it will either accidentally give it a payoff, which that's why it would happen again, or it just won't work, and so it's going to happen again. So this step of recognizing what type of misbehavior it is and redirecting that misbehavior based on what type of problem it is critical. If parents just discipline, they are not going to get the best results. They're not going to get long-lasting results. Okay? So that was attention. The fourth type of tantrum is a power tantrum. A power tantrum is, if you don't give me what I want, then I'm going to throw a tantrum until you do. And usually this is older kids. And when I say older, I just mean like 2, 3, and on up, where there's more cognitive, it's kind of more on a manipulative level. Yet really young children, they will tend to have more of the overstimulation tantrum. And they might also have the frustration tantrums because they can't speak. They might have some of the attention, but it's still more unintentional, like they really don't know how to go about getting attention in a positive way. The power tantrums tend to be much more intentional, deliberate. It seems like a more conscious choice. I'm going to do this because I'm not getting what I want. Using the Universal Blueprint, we've already gotten to question three. It's on purpose, for the purpose of power. And when you look at the purpose of power, your best tool is to give choices within limits. So you figure out what's your bottom line, and your bottom line is always the sharp RV. What issue is it that relates to safety, health, appropriateness, rights, property, rules, or values? So say a child is in the grocery store, and they want you to, or in the mall, and they want you to buy some kind of a toy that they want, and you're there to buy something else. And so they throw a tantrum because you say no to buying the toy, and remind me to go back to no's, because that's another tool that you want to use. Your bottom line is, we're here to just buy these things that we're buying today. So now what choices do they have within that limit? They can help you find the things that you're looking for. If you're in a grocery store, you can give them coupons and involve them. You give them something that they can have some power and control over, rather than arguing over if they're going to do something or not. You give them something they can have some control over. Hmm. Now, when it comes to the power tantrums, the best way to prevent a power tantrum is to use the no-nos tool. And I'd have to look up exactly which challenge that is. It's in one of the first, it would be between challenge lesson 10 and
cooperation. 8. Cooperation?
Yes. It's in the cooperation tool set. It would be after don't say don't. So I think it's right around 15 or so, lesson 15.
That's right.
Yeah. So no-nos is important, because when children ask for something and we just say no, and then we give a reason, is usually what it is. No, you can't have a toy because we're getting ready. We're only shopping for something else. No, you can't have the cookie because it'll spoil your dinner. As soon as they hear the no, they stop listening. And that's usually when the tantrum will start. Now, we still have to set limits, and we still have to deny the request. We're simply using positive words to deny the request instead of the negative word no, which then triggers the tantrum, and then they don't hear anything that we say. So the five different ways that you can deny a request, this is out of the no-nos lesson, is we'll see how good my memory is. You can give a conditional yes, which is probably the best one. So it would be, yes, you can have a cookie as soon as you finish your dinner. Yes, you can help pick out a toy, but we're shopping for Johnny, so let's pick out a toy for Johnny. Or yes, you can take something off. Say they're grabbing stuff off all the shelves in the grocery store. Yes, you can get something off the shelves. Here's a coupon. Let's see if you can look over on that shelf and see if you can find that item to pick off the shelf, so that you're giving them what they can do. That's number one. Number two is you can give information or state a reason. That's kind of two and three together. So that would be, instead of saying, no, a cookie would spoil your dinner, you can just say, well, if you ate a cookie, it could spoil your dinner. So you are just kind of leaving off the no and giving the explanation. Another one is to use wishes and fantasy. In the cookie example, a good example would be, God, wouldn't it be great if we could eat cookies for dinner? Wouldn't that be great? Like, we could eat a giant cookie, and it would have all the nutrition that we needed. That would be really great. And so you can just use wishes and fantasy. And young kids do know the difference. Especially when you do it in kind of a fun, fantastical, exaggerated way. Let's see. Offer an acceptable alternative. Well, you
take
can't
time to think.
Pardon? Offer an acceptable
alternative. I'm saying the other one, time to think.
Yes, and that's another one, is to give yourself time to think. Now, the time to think one might not work as well. Like, that would be for a situation if a child says, can I spend the night with Johnny? You know, of saying, well, let me think about that. I want to call Johnny's mom or something like that. In the middle of a store, that one might not be the one that you would choose. You know, it's up to parents to choose the best tool for the job at hand.
Yep.
They just want to get to the best toolbox and pick the best tool. So in the situation with the mom at the mall, there's a couple things. Number one, parents need to be consistent. This is out of Chapter 15, consistency. Parents need to be consistent with how they parent their children at home and in public. One of the things that can cause children to act up in public is that if parents do something behind closed doors that they're not willing to do in public, children learn that they can get away with different things. So say if a parent might use something like spanking where they might not want to do that in public, well, children then see, oh, if I misbehave in public, I won't get a spanking, and gee, I wonder what will happen. And so they'll tend to test more. So parents, number one, want to do things consistently, both in private and in public. Then what they do in public, they want to make sure that it's following the universal blueprint and that it's acknowledging their feelings, but still setting limits and redirecting the misbehavior before you go to discipline. To tell a quick story, and then I'll go on to discipline. A real funny story about tantrums. I was on a flight. I don't remember where I was flying home from, but I ended up sitting next to somebody who was a grandparent and a foster parent, which I thought was just beautiful, divine coincidence since I trained foster parents. And so we struck up this wonderful conversation, and we just started talking about all kinds of stuff. And she said, oh, my grandkids know I don't do tantrums. She said, I tell them, I don't do tantrums. If you throw a tantrum, you're automatically not going to get what you want. And she said they were walking in the mall with her grandkids, and they passed it's called an Orange Julius store. It's like an orange drink, and it's a place you can get like a fruit smoothie. And the child said, I want an Orange Julius. I want an Orange Julius. And she said, we're on our way to lunch right now. We're just going to go up the escalator, and we're going to be in the food court. Well, he threw himself on the ground and started throwing a tantrum, and she said, I just stopped and looked at him and said, oh, you must have forgotten. I don't do tantrums. And he stopped dead in his tracks, looked at her and went, oh, yeah, got up, brushed himself off, and kept on walking.
Awesome.
So if kids know that their tantrums aren't going to get them what they want, and that would be the case for a power tantrum, kids need to know that they can't get what they want by throwing a tantrum. However far they push a parent before that parent gives in, that's how far the child will push the parent the next time. So the parent's actually conditioning the child to behave worse every time before they will give in and give them what they want. So the key with power tantrums is to use choices ahead of time to prevent them and to offer choices with limits if they do have a tantrum, to get to their bottom line and then offer some kind of choice that will involve the child. So after doing those things, whether it's frustration, tantrum, the overstimulation, which is PQ, attention or power, which is PO, two things. One is if it becomes a destructive tantrum that the child is like banging their head on the ground or throwing themselves on the floor, then in parent tool shop, safety always comes first. So if your kid's banging his head against a cement floor in the mall, you're not going to stand there and go, oh, I can see you're really upset about this as the blood starts squirting from his head. So what you want to do instead is to deal with the safety first. So you might pick up the child and move them to a safe place. Or if you're at home, you might move them to put a pillow under their head or move them to some place where they can have something physical to do besides taking it out on themselves, give them something else physical that they can do. You want to deal with the danger first. But while you're doing that, you're still going to be using, like I said earlier, you still say the same words. You acknowledge the feelings, and you set the limits, and then you redirect according to what type of tantrum it is while you're moving the child. Probably the most appropriate discipline for, let me say this, after you redirect the misbehavior, usually what comes is discipline. One of the most common disciplines that parents use for tantrums is timeouts. And timeouts aren't actually a discipline tool. To be most effective, they're actually a keep your cool or anger stress management tool. So When tantrums are actually logically related to use when children have lost control and are having a tantrum. However, we don't use them in the traditional way that most people have learned how to do tantrums, where you stick a kid in a chair, tell them to sit still, they can't move, they can't talk, and then you set a timer for one year of age that they are. That's how most parents have been told to do tantrums, told how to do timeouts. And by the way, there's also an article on timeouts on the blog right now, and there's a link to an interview that I did on timeouts. So that's, I don't know if the link's up there yet or not, but I do know that the article's on there. So there's more details about timeouts. So the key with timeouts is that you only want to use a timeout when it's logically related. The purpose of a timeout is to calm down. So it's only logically related to use when a child has lost control. So in the case of tantrums, it is a logical consequence or a logical tool to use timeouts in that situation. However, we don't use them as a discipline. We use them as a means of teaching the child how to calm themselves down. And so then this gets into Chapter 9, Keep Your Cool Tool Set, and this is also one of the challenge lessons. It would be, 19, it would be right around lesson 20. No, it's after 18, 9, 19. So, yeah, it's going to be right around lesson 20 or so. In terms of keeping your cool is when you want to teach a child how to calm down, you help sit down and brainstorm where they can go and what they can do. Where they go is determined by whether or not they're going to calm down best by themselves, alone, or if they would calm down better if they can still see the parent or be around the parent. Some children actually will get worse if they're isolated by themselves. So that's how you figure out where. What they do when they're in the timeout is determined by whether or not they need quiet time, whether or not they need to express themselves, where they could cry or scream or draw or color or paint, or if it would be more helpful for them to do something physical. So if a child is throwing something, kicking something, hurting themselves in their tantrum, then you want to give them something physical to do so they can direct that in a physical way. And then the timing of it is, as soon as they're calm, the timeout is over, and either you just go on with what you were doing, or if you need to do some problem solving, then you do it after the timeout. So that goes all the way from prevention. Your prevention tools are the same as the redirection. When it happens, what to say, what to do, how to redirect, and then if needed, how to use timeouts in an effective way.
Sure. Thank you, Jody. That's absolutely awesome.
And see that?
I wish I could be in that position where I could answer the parent like you answered me tonight.
Well, and I don't know, when I'm actually out in public, and I strike up conversations with parents all the time. I've given advice in some of the strangest situations. I can remember giving blood, and I don't like to watch. So I said, tell me about something. Do you have kids? And she just started talking to me about her kids, and then we just ended up talking, and I forget what her issue was, but she was dealing with some challenge, and I was like, well, you know, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And it ended up, she was like, oh, my gosh, this is great, and, you know. So I don't always give a full lesson. In these goal challenge calls, as well as the goal challenge itself, I want to give people generic information so that if there's 100 people on this call, 100 people can hear that and take from it a customized way of applying it to their situation. If that mother were here right now, then I would be asking her some of the questions about when this behavior happens, how do you feel? Because that's how we identify whether or not it's unintentional or on purpose and what the purpose is. Do you feel like he's being manipulative, or is he just falling apart? Because the answer or what she would do would depend on why the child is throwing the tantrum. And it's not a gazillion reasons. It's only one of those four reasons that the child's throwing a tantrum. So what you could do, if you're supporting her, what you can do is to be asking her the questions, and this is what our certified advisors do, and our group facilitators also. When parents have a challenge, yes, they can give the information so that everyone hearing it can learn, which is what I just did, but they also can then work one-on-one with that parent and say, okay, in your situation, how are we going to apply the universal blueprint? Because universal blueprint is universal, but you always customize it to that parent with that child in that moment. So I would be asking her, when this happens, what's the context of it? When he throws a tantrum in, is it because he's not getting what he wants? Is it because he is falling apart because he's tired? If it always seems to happen in the mall and when she takes him shopping, what is it about that situation that seems to trigger these tantrums? And that's going to be a clue to what the cause of the tantrum is. Does that make sense?
Jody, I think maybe one other... Yeah, it does. It just has highlighted another problem which I'm facing is, you know, the kinds of questions that one asks. So maybe one of our little chats could actually be about how does one go about asking questions that do not send a no answer, but are leading questions to lead the person to self-discovery, I suppose. Is that the way you say it?
Yeah, sure. On the Gold Call, we could do that from the parenting perspective. In the advisor training and the group facility training, that's what we learn. What the leaders learn to do in terms of helping parents come up with solutions. So I will. I will put that on the agenda for next time.
It could almost be like a self-talk. You know, how do I self-talk myself to asking the correct kind of questions so that I can help myself when I find myself in a situation where I need to ask questions rather than just problem solve.
Okay. That's a great idea. All right, I will put that on the agenda for the next time. I do see that we're 5 minutes from the top of the hour, and I do have another call at the top of the hour. And actually, Trevor, I think you do too. I have our leader conference call in 5 minutes.
I think I do.
Yes. So actually, let's say goodbye for today. I will get with the rest of our Gold Call members in the next week or so. And in the meantime, we definitely, how about if we come back, and that will be at the top of our agenda for next week, of how to ask leading questions, not manipulative questions, but self-exploratory questions, not only of children, but of ourselves. We can figure out what's going on in a situation and come up with an answer. Sound
awesome.
Good?
Thank you, Jody.
All right,
Tony,
it's
been
great.
a pleasure meeting you, Tony.
All right, and I think Tony either got dropped off the call or he had to leave a little bit early. So, all right. Take care, and we'll talk to everybody next week. All right, bye-bye.